my goodness. What's the procedure? What do we do, people?
The bones are dead.
Oh, how did that happen?
It's out in the hall.
No, we don't know that. The smoke could be coming through an air duct.
Oh, my God. Okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm.
Wait.
Everybody calm down.
No, Michael, no. Touch the handle. If it's hot, there could be a fire in the hallway.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything and introduce our guest, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. And for this episode, the New York Giant beat writer tour continues. We welcome on Zach Rosenblatt. You can follow him on Twitter, at Zach Blatt. He writes for NJ Advanced Media. Zach, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's awesome to be here.
All right. Well, we got you on at a good time.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it would have been a better episode to record yesterday afternoon before the Washington football team beat down the Pittsburgh Steelers.
But I honestly forgot about that with all the stuff that's been going on today.
It is a crazy day, but the Giants are not terrible. I'm Ron Burgundy, so let's talk about it. Weiss, where should we start off? Because there's a lot going on, not just on the field with how the Giants have been performing, but a lot of takes flying around about the coaching staff, about Dave Gettleman specifically, and just the overall aura of this team, where for the first time, we said it last week, for the first time since 2016, they control their destiny into a playoff spot.
Yes, this is sort of, I'm not going to call it uncharted territory, but we're not used to this. This Sunday was probably the biggest win for the Giants since, I don't know, that Sunday night game against Dallas in 2016 when Odell Beckham took that 65-yarder to the house. But it was a huge organizational win. And I mean, I don't remember the last time I was this into a Giants game like this one. I mean, I was screaming, throwing hands, cursing, yelling. The emotions were high and they pulled it out. And this, I talked about it last week when we were talking about it. I said, something is different this time around with this team, with this coaching staff. This is not, I don't get the sense this is another Ben McAdoo or Pat Shurmur. You're seeing something special forming here. And Sunday was sort of the coming out party, I think, nationally for Joe Judge. I think now nationally he's getting the respect and attention that I think he deserves. And also for Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator. And listen, man, going into Seattle, and I know they didn't have fans, but to go into Seattle with your backup quarterback, Colt McCoy, who hasn't won a game since 2014.
Against an MVP frontrunner quarterback.
Yes, and to do it defensively. And remember, this defense, it doesn't have high-priced free agents like Olivier Vernon and JPP and Damon Snacks Harrison. And those high-priced free agents are not on there. You saw guys like, this was what, like, I was eye-popping to me. Tay Crowder, Carter Coughlin, Nico Lalos,
Cam Brown.
These were the guys that were making key plays and key moments. And Leonard Williams, USC Leo, as we call him. just a remarkable game for that man. And you just got to tip your cap to Joe Judge, what he's doing. And you got to be very confident as a Giant fan. You know, that optimism is now sort of turning into confidence. And you have to be excited for what the future holds. It's not just about the division race, I think. I think it's overall the direction of this organization is very positive, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially if you get some talent in the door eventually. They're not going to be this year. But, Zach, let me ask you. We had Jordan Ron on a couple weeks ago at this point, and he gave us some insight into Joe Judge and not just how he is as a coach, but his personality and how he's getting buy-in from – everyone from, you know, the high profile guys such as James Bradbury, who is sort of the quote unquote marquee free agent signing for this offseason. But like Weiss just mentioned, from some of these UDFAs, from these late round picks, what is your, I guess, perception of Joe Judge and how the players perceive Joe Judge around the locker room and on the practice field and even on the game field?
You know, it's interesting. There's two sides to Joe Judge, and I think everybody, he's someone who keeps everything close to the vest, so you don't really see maybe all of it. But, you know, there's the side that the public image that maybe he was getting criticized for early on, that he's this hard ass and, you know, he's trying to be like Bill Belichick. He, you know, it's all BS. He's just doing what other guys who have failed have done. You know, he just disciplinarian to be a disciplinarian, whatever. But there's the other side of it where I talked to a player pretty recently, and he was talking about how he's never felt like he trusted a coaching staff that to have his best interests at heart than this coaching staff in his entire career, dating back to college. And that goes into, you know, they're willing to tell them when they're playing poorly. They're willing to bench them if they do the wrong thing. They're willing to tell them how good they're playing. But they also, like, actually are making, like, personal connections to the staff. And it kind of, like, just something I've thought for a while. I think Joe Judge kind of runs this team like it was a college program, which I don't know if it necessarily would work all the time. But I think he hired a really good coaching staff, which I think has been an underrated part of this season. Like, these guys are really good at developing. Guys are getting – I mean, look at the outside linebacker – They'd lost their top four guys to either trade or injury, and they were playing, you know, Carter Coughlin, Cam Brown, Nico Lelos, and Jabal Sheard. And those guys looked – it might have been their best performance as a group of the season the other day, which, like, is just saying, like, everything about – the secondary has been fantastic. Isaac Yiadom looks like a player maybe, and the offensive line keeps getting better. I know the coaching there is a little – that's a whole other thing, obviously. But that's something that stuck out when that guy told me that. And then, I mean, you hear Leonard Williams even said something – after the game on Sunday, and I asked Joe about this. He said that he knew more about how good this team was when they were 1-7 than right now when they're 5-7. And I think, you know, he was one of the players in particular, like, we're really close. We feel like we're going to get there. And when a guy's saying that when you're 0-5, you're like, okay, yeah, you're really close. You're 0-5. And then it was true. So I think that kind of just says a lot about how Joe has done a really good job of just, like, keeping the same message no matter what was happening around them.
Just a random thought popped into my head, and this is what we tend to do here, Zach. We'll just go off on tangents. But something that has sort of been thrown around a little bit on Twitter and in the media over the last week or so, the development of the Bill Belichick coaching tree, which has been forever shat upon because of the head coaching failures of people that have left Bill Belichick, seems to be turning a corner between the success that Joe Judge is having with a ragtag group, Brian Flores down in Miami in the run for the division, maybe not as much now after a Bills win yesterday at San Francisco, but even Vrabel, who's having sort of a down year, really turned the Titans around, helped develop Tannehill after the Adam Gase ruined his career. It's just, like, interesting. All three sort of emerging at the same time.
Yeah, I think it is obviously important to temper expectations a little bit because it is still the first season. You know, things can go wrong or whatever.
I mean, listen, but we were all on the Ben McAdoo bandwagon after season one, so
what I will say though is I think one thing that makes Joe a little more unique is that, like, Bill Belichick isn't his only influence. Like, Nick Saban is another influence of his, and I know Saban, you know, is looked at as like a Belichick type, but Saban is really good at developing coaches, especially in college. But like, he does a really good job at that, and I think Joe is really smart, and I think he's taken something from all these guys, and I think he's definitely he seems like almost more human than Belichick, who comes across like a robot a lot of times. And I think these guys, I mean, you saw the whole thing with Evan Ingram that kind of went viral this last week, where he had a bed and so he wore the Ole Miss bucket hat, and, like, I mean, you could never picture Bill Belichick doing something like that. And I know maybe he was just doing that so everybody would stop calling him the next Belichick or whatever. I think in some ways he does have some, like, roboticism to him, where if you ask him certain things, he's always going to say the same answer, blah, blah, blah. Like, maybe he's not always, like, forthcoming with info, which I get in a way. But, yeah, I think he has a more unique background than the usual like a Matt Patricia, who only claim to fame was that he was on Belichick's staff, basically.
And that he was a rocket scientist, a literal rocket scientist.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the guys that were trying to be like Bill Belichick were trying to do that without, like, Joe Judge means what he says. He's not just saying it to, like, teach a lesson or something like that. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I have been way more impressed with him than I thought I would be, especially because I, you know, in the beginning when he's doing that whole thing where he won't even say Daniel Jones's name for the first 3 months he was on the job, I'm like, come on, dude, are you really how you're going to be? And then he kind of started opening up, and he clearly had a reason for doing that. So everything he does has a purpose, which I think is important. And whether or not it works out, you know, it ultimately just comes down to whether he wins and loses. But he's a much better, you know, fit for this job than when I had never heard of him before January. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, like, seeing, obviously this is your first year covering the team, but some of the people that I talked to, obviously Jordan, Ron, and other people, you know, it's an interesting thing with Joe Judge, because obviously every time a Belichick disciple gets a job, the comparison is always, he's Bill Belichick, he's Bill Belichick, he's trying to be Belichick, he's trying to bring the Patriot way here. But lately, I get the impression from people that know Giants history that maybe they don't necessarily remind, they as in the front office, the ownership who hired him, they don't remind him of Belichick. They remind him more of Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
You know, and that was very, like, interesting to me, because I when I heard it, I'm like, wow, this is like, I see what they saw, essentially, because this is, while there is that disciplinarian, there's also a guy that cares. And if, you know, I don't remember, you know, I was born after Parcells, towards the end of Parcells' run with the Giants, or in the heart of it, but I was never around when Parcells was coaching the Giants. But the one thing, you know, when you read books, when you watch documentaries, you listen to former players, they say, well, yeah, he was a hard ass. He was somebody that got on guys. He was very emotional, and you saw the emotion. There was also the soft side to him. He actually showed his human side. And, you know, I don't know. Like you said, the future is unknown, but and maybe Ethan calls me an optimist, and I sort of am at times, but I just sense something different here. And the results, I think, are showing it. It was very easy for this team, 0-5, with the crazy year it's been and no offseason, for them to just fold, you know, we're done, no talent, you know, it's the transition year. It was very easy for that to happen, but for him to, and it was very easy given his sort of the perception on him, it was very easy for him to lose a lot of players too, right? We saw the situation with Golden Tate, and I'm going to be honest with you, I thought that was it for Golden Tate. He's going to get cut. This is we're done. But he got a guy like Golden Tate to sit in front of a camera and apologize. So whatever happened, whatever discussion they had, it worked. So when you see stuff like that, it's like, oh, well, maybe there's something else here. And I don't know. I'll say this. I'm cautiously confident that the Giants have found not just their guy, but a special guy going forward.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even I would imagine, I mean, I haven't had anyone directly tell me, that's just my impression from talking to people in general. Like, I'm sure at first when he started doing all these methods in training camp, the players were questioning it at first. You know, Sterling Shepard said he hadn't run laps since middle school. Like, they were doing all stuff like that. And, I mean, you guys know all the background there. And I think it very easily could have – if they kept losing, I mean, who knows if – I mean, win cures all ills, you know. So I think it has really worked. You know, I wrote something a couple weeks ago, and it was a little after the Mark Colombo thing. About how I had multiple people tell me that like players are scared shitless of getting into Joe Judge's doghouse, which
yeah, I read that.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
A lot of people took that as a positive. I think that was the right way to take it, because, you know, I mean, you saw what happened with Golden Tate. He was willing to bench a guy they're paying a lot of money, you know, and embarrass him, really put him on scout team, make him feel like, you know, you're not bigger than the team. You know, the Mark Colombo thing. Mark Colombo didn't want to do what Judge told him, so he said, "All right, well, you're gone." I mean, obviously there was other stuff and cursing and blah blah blah. But, you know,
put it succinctly.
I mean, Andrew Thomas was benched for being late to a Saturday night meeting. You know, that he's cut, like, average players who made, like, Damian Ratley had a really bad game and made some big mistakes, and they cut him the week after. That he wasn't good or anything. But the point being, like, I think players saw that. And that, I mean, I talked to Kevin Boss for that story about, because he was there with Tom Coughlin, and he's like, before I arrived at the Giants, I was scared. I was intimidated to play for him, because you hear all the stories. But, you know, Tom Coughlin, it took a few years to realize that he had to have that soft side also. He needed to be a guy that the players could go to and not be scared to talk to, and, you know, that they trusted. And I think Joe Judge kind of skipped the step where he needed to be talked to. And I think players don't feel like intimidated by him as much as they don't want to disappoint him.
Yep. And I think that's part of being a young head coach. You relate better to some of the players because generationally you're closer to them. All right. So back to the Seattle game. A great game, but I guess what is your impression of the offense, Zach? For me, I understand a guy like Colt McCoy, he is what he is at this point in his career. He's got stone feet, probably doesn't have a lot of arm strength left. My frustration with the Giants offense pretty much the entire season, losing, winning, doesn't matter, has been the aggressive or the lack of aggression in the offense. The unwillingness or the timidness to take shots downfield in certain situations, but especially against a Seahawks defense that ranks last in the league in yards allowed per game. Now, don't get me wrong, the Giants ran all over them, and that was great to see, not just from, okay, they can do it, but the development of the offensive line and them finally playing like a single unit, and also the final emergence of Wayne Train that we've all been...
Finally, he
had his day in the sun with the Washington football team.
Yeah,
but
I feel like most people didn't realize was still like in the league when he came back.
I didn't until he came to the Giants. But yes, the final emergence of Wayne Gallman, for this guy. I mean, I don't think there's a single Giants fan that has a negative thing to say about him. We're all happy that he finally broke out. But I digress. What's your impression of Jason Garrett's offense, and what in your opinion do you think is the hesitation to take shots downfield? And with Daniel Jones, is it they don't want him holding onto the ball too long? They're trying to lessen the number of turnovers. Do they not trust Colt McCoy? Is this just what the offense is going to be this year and even moving forward?
You know, I think if there's one major thing to be concerned about, whether it's for this season or, you know, the off season or into next year, I think it is Jason Garrett and
yeah,
you know. And not only that, but like their lack of like weapons in terms of like why, like they don't have like a guy. Right. And I think they try to rely too much on Evan Engram, which I don't know how you guys feel about him at this point, but like it's just like too volatile. And I know he has talent,
yeah,
but
it's too much. It's the scene from The Office where Michael's getting the vasectomy, the snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap. It's either that or the Seinfeld Two-Face episode where, depending on the lighting, Jerry is like totally.
Seinfeld and Office references in a row. I love that.
There you go. Hey, this is an Office podcast.
But yeah, I think I'm legitimately concerned about it. And, you know, to answer your question, like I think by, you know, the midway point of the season, I think the lack of downfield shots, which they had more than at the beginning of the season, weirdly, was that probably to avoid, you know, to make it so Daniel Jones wasn't trying too much, wasn't turning the ball over. You know, they were doing a lot of quick passes. He was like one of the quickest throwers in the league for a few weeks there. And I think that was working a little bit. Jones wasn't turning the ball over. But the offense really hasn't, you know, even in this winning streak, hasn't been like that great. The running game has been really good, but they're still not scoring that much.
Right.
They need to win games that are like low scoring where they force turnovers on the other side. Like they're really relying on the defense right now, because this is kind of the team that Dave Gettleman wanted to build, if you think about it, because he always talked about, you know, building the trenches and running the ball or whatever. But I don't think you can win long term in the league if you don't have an explosive offense. And I question whether Jason Garrett is the coach to get them there. And I think these next four games, five or six or whatever, if they make the playoffs, I think it's really going to be an evaluation of him. I think Joe Judge showed that he's willing to fire a guy if he's not doing his job. And if the next four games, you know, the offensive line excuse isn't there anymore. The offensive line is playing really well. The running game excuse isn't there anymore. The running game is playing really well. So if he can't get these wide receivers open, and if he can't get Daniel Jones, you know, completing passes down the field, which he's done pretty well when he actually throws it down the field. I think they have to move on from Garrett. And then you have the question of, you know, how good is that for Daniel Jones to be going through his third offensive coordinator in 3 years? So I get why they hired Garrett. I don't think it's worked out. You know, I've seen a lot of Giants fans, you know, making jokes about it. Like, no, you guys don't want to hire Patrick Graham as a head coach. You want to hire Jason Garrett.
I think I'm the CEO of that trend.
Yeah. So I think best case scenario is someone just hires him away, because I know John Mara is really fond of Jason Garrett. But it does seem like Joe Judge is willing to move on from guys. If a group's not playing well, it's going to be on the coach most likely. And so, I mean, Jason Garrett is the one who should be most worried about his job. out of pretty much everybody on this team right now, because I think Daniel Jones even is probably safe for next year at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Washington winning yesterday, the pressure, I think, rose a little bit. I mean, I know, like I said, this win wasn't about make. It's not just about making the playoffs. It's a long-term thing. But yep. Look, when you draft a quarterback sixth overall, year two, I understand the Giants lack weapons. But at some point, Daniel Jones has to show he's the guy. And he's not going to answer that question over the next six games. But he's going to make us feel a lot more comfortable about him going into year three, which is sort of the make or break year for a quarterback, right? So given the circumstances, and the circumstance being, despite Washington's win, the division is still bad, and the Giants are in the driver's seat. They've proven that they can win games getting really bad quarterback play. We saw that last week. They relied heavily on the defense, relied heavily on the offensive line. By the way, Ethan, when was the last time we saw a Giant offensive line dominate like that? I mean, it has been a long time. Yeah, it's been a really long time.
It's funny. A few weeks ago, I was talking to some other beat reporters. We were like at a practice or whatever, and they were like, the best offensive line that like Saquon or Wingolma or whatever had played with was the one with like Chad Wheeler. Like, yeah.
Like who got absolutely like, dominated? Who got absolutely dominated when he got put in?
That he played for. So I just thought that it's just funny, like how bad this group has been for years.
Yes,
it's been horrible, and to see something like that is awesome. But back to the Daniel Jones point, the excuse is out the window, bad offensive line. We know the defense can hold opponents to under 30 points. Over the last seven games, I believe defenses in today's NFL, which has been a historic scoring year, the Giants are holding defenses to 19 points over the last seven games. It's astonishing what they've been able to do. So they have a very good defense. They have a strong running game. We're seeing what Wayne Gallman is doing. The offensive line is playing really, really well. Now it's time for Daniel Jones to show that he is a franchise quarterback. And given what the Giants are up against now over the next four games, and you know, with what Washington is doing, now he's got to go out there and lead us to some victories. And we have to start winning games, not despite of Daniel Jones, but because of Daniel Jones, if that makes sense a little bit. I'm not saying he has to go out there and throw 300 yards and three touchdowns, but he's got to play mistake-free football, smart football, make plays, and win games for the Giants because they're going up against some dynamic offenses.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you think about it, since he didn't start this last game, he still has only beaten Washington and, like, a couple other teams in his 20-plus games as a starter. Like, he still hasn't had that big win yet. Colt McCoy stole his, like, signature win from him, essentially.
Yeah.
This would have been his signature win if he had played in that game. I mean, they beat the Eagles. That was probably the biggest one because of the history there, obviously. He needs to prove that, like you said, like he needs to prove that he can, number one, go and win a meaningful game. They haven't played in any of those with him. And number two, he needs to prove that he's not going to lose games for them at the very least. And he's certainly done that this season. You know, if he doesn't turn the ball over as much as he did, they have a few more wins. I mean, there's other
Tampa
stuff.
Bay. Yeah, Tampa Bay is the big one. That's the big one.
Yep, just look at the margin of defeat in almost every, besides the 49ers game, which feels definitely like an outlier at this point. They'd be far away, the NFC East leaders, his numbers aren't very good if you look at them, like just the basic numbers. He has eight touchdowns and four fumbles lost or whatever it is. Like that's just not a good, for your starting quarterback on paper, that's not good. These last couple of games he's played, he did enough for them to win it. If he's your franchise quarterback, you'd like to see him go and do something that gets you the win as opposed to doesn't lose you it, too.
Exactly. So that's why I think the pressure is higher on Daniel Jones and Jason Garrett over the course of the last 5 weeks. 4 or 5 weeks, yeah.
Agreed. Zach, I need you to do me a solid.
What's up?
Your next piece for NJ.com needs to be something heinous, a hit piece on Patrick Graham.
Just tear him down.
Weiss and I will split the cost. We'll hire a PI.
Patrick Graham said he thinks that the pizza in Philadelphia is better than in New York.
Worse. You got to do worse. Like, get a PI, pull some like shady financial records.
Oh, God.
Do something because.
He He's too smart. He went to Yale, man. He hasn't done anything.
Oh, God damn it. He's gone. He's a goner.
I tried to edit his Wikipedia page to have him as the Giants offensive coordinator instead of the defensive coordinator, but they did not let me do that. I mean,
he honestly could probably pull it off. Like,
yes.
I've been praising him all season because even when they were losing, like the defense was like earlier in the season, like there was some Nate Ebner was getting big snaps. Devontae Downs started for half the season. Like if you just look at the guys they've had to play, Corey Ballantyne was the week one starter opposite James Brett. Remember that? Like, Adrian Colbert was claimed off of waivers and started some games for them. Tay Crowder's Mr. Irrelevant. He looks good, but he's Mr. Irrelevant. Like just what he's been able to do to like make the defense maybe even look better than it actually is. It's got to be one of the best coaching jobs in the NFL this year. And it won't get maybe it's starting to now. It hasn't been getting the attention it deserved because they still were like in the middle of the pack across the board. And usually teams that are in the middle of the pack don't get attention from outside of like that fan base. But Patrick Graham has just been the MVP of this team this year.
Do you think there's a good chance he becomes a head coach after this year?
I don't think so.
I think at this
point he probably gets interviews at least. I mean, if you get him in the room, then he probably can impress somebody. But I don't know if a team can justify to like its fan base or its owner hiring a guy who coached the, you know, again, a middle of the pack defense or whatever. And the year before, the Dolphins defense was pretty terrible. But like he's better than the numbers, obviously. Yes.
Here's what I'll say. If a guy like Robert Saleh is not head coach this year, it's going to be a little tougher for Patrick Graham to get a job this year.
Yeah, there's other guys where it's like it's his time.
It's their turn, yes.
That will be before him. But I mean, nobody knew Joe Judge. Joe Judge came out of left field as you could possibly have for a major franchise like the Giants to hire. Like, I don't think you guys probably didn't consider him when you were, you know, running through all your list of candidates all of last year.
No,
brother, I didn't know Joe Judge from Judge Joe Brown.
So, you could have walked by me and be like, that guy.
The thing for me is, and I was having a conversation with somebody earlier today, and he reminded me. He said, remember in 07 when Spagnuolo had that great defensive year, he didn't get a head coaching job after that Super Bowl. He got a job after 2008 when he had another good season with the defense. Then he got the job. So he said, well, yeah, Patrick Graham is impressive and times are changed. It's not out of the realm that he gets a head coaching job. It's just not something that, you know, you would worry about right now. I think he would still – Patrick Graham is still a year away from getting there, but he's definitely put himself on the map, especially after that Seattle game.
And it's totally reasonable too. You got a guy performing at the level that Patrick Graham is with the dearth of talent that he has. Show me again. Before I hand you the keys to the Ferrari that is an NFL franchise, do it again. Let me make sure that this wasn't a fluke.
I mean, you've seen coaches who had a great year, not like exactly like this, where they get hired before you like see if they can maintain that kind of thing, and then they wind up not doing that. So, I mean, again, like you said, it's certainly possible he goes in and wows somebody in an interview, and they're like, all right, maybe we do have to actually think about hiring this guy. But I mean, this is a pretty good situation for him right now. He's coaching up a young team that doesn't have a lot of talent, and in theory, he's just gonna get better. So next year, if they're a top five defense, top 10 defense, then he's probably gone after that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Garrett doesn't get a head coaching job. There's a lot of people, a lot of teams that really love Jason Garrett. And it's weird.
NFL loves like going in a circle with the same guys.
The coaching carousel.
Yeah. I mean, I figure Jason Garrett would eventually get a job again. So we'll see.
It's weird. It's like – he's the NBA has the same. The NBA is worse than the NFL with this.
The NHL is the worst of all. The NHL coaching carousel is unbelievable. You see a guy on his sixth chance who has made one like Stanley Cup final in his career, and it's just round and round we go.
Well, I saw a rumor the other day that the Jets are thinking about Bill Cowher or something like that. Somebody sent me that. I don't know.
That always happens.
Yeah, it's like I tweeted that. Oh, it's that time of year again. That was Boomer Esiason doing his old pal a favor, just throwing that out there to see what people thought.
It does sound like something insane that the Jets would do, though. That's why you have to believe it like, a little bit.
Yeah, and also why it's not out of the realm of possibility that maybe Jason Garrett is the Jets' future head coach.
Oh, man, that would be so funny.
We joke about it, but I think he'll be a candidate. I really do.
Nothing can be ruled out with the New York Jets. I'll say that.
Exactly. Anyway, you were saying something about the coaching carousel.
With the NBA, I mean, in the NFL, like, people get on the NFL, it's such an old school league, right? It's like there's a fraternity and all that. But if you look at it, the NFL is always looking for that next hot commodity. They're always trying to attach themselves to the forward-thinking thing. Even teams that aren't organizations that aren't forward-thinking are trying to sell themselves that. Like, an NFL head coach rarely gets three tries, right? But in the NBA, there's, like, multiple guys that haven't won that get three tries. So it's just crazy to me. I was just pointing that out. So in the NFL, for a guy like Jason Garrett, for him to get another job, it's sort of almost, I think it's going to happen at some point where a team will, you know, call him. If Daniel Jones plays well over the last 5 weeks, Jason Garrett will be head coach. And the Giants go to the playoffs, Jason Garrett will get a head coaching job. That is my take.
I don't know to justify that.
All right, rest of the division, rest of the way. Zach, do you think the Giants are going to win the NFC East?
I do, but Washington beating the Steelers like has me hesitating more than I did after the Seahawks. Maybe I was a little too declarative after that Seahawks win because I just didn't think Washington had any chance of beating the Steelers. But yeah. Washington, you know, they probably, I don't know, maybe they have the best overall talent in the NFC East, I guess you could say. I mean, it's really hard. This division's like kind of strange, but, you know, their defense is pretty good. They have Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson, and I don't know, their offensive line's pretty bad. But they've played really well. They beat a good team. Their schedule's easier than the Giants, obviously. If the Giants can go and beat the Cardinals, which I definitely think they can, then they're in really good position, obviously.
Yeah.
And you would hope that they beat the Cowboys in Week 17. Any weird things happen in Week 17 in the NFC East, so who knows? Not as sure they can beat the Browns, Ravens, though I think they'll play them tough. They play everybody tough. So as I see it right now, I would say yes, mainly because of that tiebreaker they have on Washington. That like, is their calling card. Like you said, they control their own destiny. If they lose, then they're going to be in trouble. They have to keep winning.
Yeah.
I never thought I would be talking about this in Week 14, you know, after they started 1-7, where I definitely declared them dead, fire everybody, whatever. Not fire, but fire Gettleman, certainly.
Yes. And it's still fire Gettleman, but
now it's like you can't rule them out of any game at this point. I think they've proven that. I mean, they're not playing the Chiefs or anybody like that, but you can't really rule anybody out.
Yeah.
Them out.
Yeah, I think if you had asked me a week or two ago, and I might have said it honestly, of their remaining games that weren't the Cowboys, I would have told you that the win in that bunch of games was Arizona. Certainly not Seattle. But
yeah, Seattle I had as the hardest. I like ranked them a couple weeks ago. I had Seattle as the hardest one. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Arizona, I've been calling them overrated for weeks now. And listen, I'm a fan of Kyler. I'm a fan of Cliff. But there's just – Kyler Murray just strikes me as the type of quarterback that Patrick Graham is going to put in a mental pretzel and just absolutely dominate him.
Yeah. And I saw a graphic of like how they've even used DeAndre Hopkins recently. It's like it's all his really short round. So, I mean, if they can't even figure out how to use Hopkins, then Patrick Graham is not going to have much difficulty. I mean, Murray's dangerous, so I think anything's possible, certainly. But, yeah, they're not as good as I thought they were going to be.
No, and a couple weeks ago, after the Eagle game, I said I thought that the Giants were going to finish strong. I said I had them going 7-9. And of these stretch of games, I said they're going to win two and lose lose two or three and finish 7-9 was ultimately where I thought they were going to end up. I didn't think they were going to beat Seattle. Even if Daniel Jones was healthy, I said there's just no way they're going to be able to go to Seattle and win. I thought Cleveland and Arizona were the two games that they were going to get at home. I think they were going to get those wins. I thought Cleveland was going to be that signature win for them, but obviously it's Seattle now.
Well, now Cleveland looks like the best of those teams too, which is
exactly, you know, although
the NFL's weird, man. The NFL's very weird.
It is truly a week-to-week season. Like, it's crazy how much that is.
I thought the Browns were bad, like, a month ago.
I'll have my take on the Browns when we talk about your background to the Eagles, but I'll say this. I think I'm with you guys. I think they can win any game at this point. You can't rule them out of anything. Will it shock me if they run the table? Absolutely not. But I think more realistically, I think a 7-9 finish is where they're going to be, and I think they will be.
Those two wins. I think they have to get to 7-9 if they're going to win the division. I think at this point.
Yeah, I don't think six is going to do it. So I'm going to stick to that 7-9 prediction that I had. I think it's going to be enough because of the tiebreaker with Washington. And a lot of people are praising Ron Rivera, deservedly so, but his play calling and some of his clock management in those two games against the Giants might have just cost them the NFC East.
Yeah. But we'll see. Man, yeah, I forgot about the two-point call.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was –
which I was a fan of at the time because at that point no one knew that this would be the situation. And I said, fuck it. You got a lost season. You don't have a quarterback of the future. Might as well take a shot and see if you can prevent this game from going overtime.
And this is the first time the Giants is like just random dominance over Washington is going to actually pay off too, it looks like.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a funny story. When I was watching that game, I actually was upset that they missed the two-point conversion because at that time I was in my Trevor Lawrence mode. But obviously, things have changed a lot over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks.
Absolutely. What do we have up next before we dive into Zach's background?
I think that's it.
Okay.
I have a lot of questions for Zach. It's not the reason I brought him on. I brought him on because I really enjoy his writing and I really wanted to conversate with him. But I really want to talk about the Eagles with Zach. And not because I'm like, you know, I'm happy that I want to rub it into Eagles fans' face. I don't think we have a lot of Eagles listeners, but we talked about this before. I have never in my life seen a quarterback fall from grace so fast than Carson Wentz. It is insane. So with that said, Zach, you covered the Eagles for how many years?
2 years.
2 years. What the hell has happened?
I mean, I think it's all mental with Carson, honestly. The Eagles have handled it very poorly. You know, between the way the whole Nick Foles thing happened, I mean, a freaking statue was built of the guy, and Carson had to go and, like, you know, be a starter in front of him. Like, obviously you're going to be thinking about the guy with the statue and the fan base is obsessed with probably your Super Bowl. I think the injuries have played a toll, you know, done a toll on him. The draft pick of Jalen Hurts was kind of the nail in the coffin ultimately. The Eagles have done a terrible job of surrounding Carson Wentz with talent. And, you know, it's been all aging guys. They've tried to do like 1 year things and, you know, buy low veterans and all this stuff. And it's failed. They've drafted the wrong receivers repeatedly. Like Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson almost looks worse than the DK Metcalf one since everybody passed on DK Metcalf. Justin Jefferson, they could have drafted and they should have drafted, and they picked Jalen Reagor, who nobody had graded higher. And, you know, I just think all that has played, you know, played a toll on Wentz. But like you said, like this is he's not the first quarterback to have a bad supporting cast. He's not the first quarterback where a team drafted a guy and he had to look over his shoulder. He's the first one to be as good as he was in 2017 and as good and as, you know, pretty good as he was the next 2 years to be as bad as he is this year. And, you know, I'm writing about this for a story that's coming out on Wednesday. Like, I think the Giants can learn a lot of lessons from all the things that the Eagles did wrong. You know, like we were talking about earlier, I don't know if they know necessarily if Daniel Jones is the guy yet. But if he is the guy, you know, wait to pay him, number one. I think the Eagles and the Rams both show that you don't pay them until you have to. Like, who cares? If they're upset 3 years from now, then whatever. If they're that good, then you deal with that then. But then you run the risk of paying them early that they turn out like this and then get hurt or whatever. So wait. Number two, you got to surround them with talent on offense. Like, that's for sure. Like, they need to do it. But this is the offseason. The Giants need to find a number one receiver. The offensive line, they seem to be doing a better job of. But just, like, never stop surrounding him with guys that, you know, can make plays. And then capitalizing on this window of when he's on that rookie contract is just crucial. You know, don't trade too many draft picks away to win now. But still try to win now as much as you can. And then you have to hit on the draft picks, too, for the future and all that. Because the Eagles have done really bad in the draft. Even when they won in 2017, their draft class was terrible. And I think you're seeing that, you know, be a problem now. So you need to hit – I mean, it's an obvious thing to say. You need to hit on your draft picks. And then I think the Giants did this year, it looks like, in the early going. So if you can build your supporting cast on guys on rookie deals, then you can spend money on a James Bradbury – who has been the biggest difference maker they brought in this year. So I think the Eagles' disaster is like just a really good like warning sign to the Giants of how not to do things.
But can I tell you something? We've experienced something like this. Now, not with the quarterback, but when the Giants won Super Bowl 46, after that, obviously you win the Super Bowl, you're going to let the guys come back and try to repeat, try to defend their title. Totally understandable. But once you fail and you don't win, then you got to start saying, okay, I know Malcolm Jenkins is a good player. I know Jason Peters is a good player. I know Fletcher Cox.
And, hanging on too long is a problem.
Yeah, and you got these guys that were good and were integral parts of your team, Brandon Graham. But I got to start getting younger. I got to start getting cheaper. The Giants didn't make that mistake in 2013 and really wasted sort of the back end of Eli Manning's career. I do think that if they put together a roster, they could have made one more run. I'm not saying they would have won, but they would have been a lot better than what they were in 14 and 15. But I think with the Eagles, outside of what happened with Carson Wentz, they really made the same mistakes that the Giants made when they won that second Super Bowl by not getting younger, by not trying to retool around your franchise quarterback. And when you miss on draft picks and you're trading draft picks for contracts, the Golden Tate trade, remember that one? And you start doing those type of things in today's NFL, you know, where everyone's getting younger, everyone's getting cheaper, to a certain extent, this is what happens. Now, with Carson Wentz, you brought up an awesome point about paying your franchise quarterback. Me and Ethan have this conversation on the show and off the air all the time. Franchise versus starting quarterback. And I put it out there today. When you have to pay a guy $30 to $35 million a year that these, you know, quarterback contracts are right now, that's when you really start to learn about who this guy is. Because when you start asking a guy, hey, I can't afford to bring in top-notch defensive players, top-notch linemen, right? There's going to be some weaknesses because you're eating up, you know, a large chunk of our salary cap. And that's not an excusing Howie Roseman. But when you need Carson Wentz, or when you need your franchise quarterback to mask that, and he can't do that, to me, that's what separates a starting quarterback and a franchise quarterback. And I think Carson Wentz, who I was a fan of Carson Wentz. I thought this guy was going to terrorize the NFCs. But one mistake we always make these days, more so than ever, because of this rookie contract is, and this is why I said Cleveland, I'm going to talk about Cleveland, is you can make a good quarterback look great during his rookie year because you can put so much around him. But once, you know, he starts eating up a large chunk of your salary cap, that's when you start to learn a lot about who the quarterback is. And that's why I give the Rams so much credit, because they're making it work. And they're making it work because McVay is one of the five or six best offensive minds that this game has ever seen. So not every team has that luxury. So with Wentz, this is sort of a great, and I can't wait to read your piece, but this is a reminder. He might look good on his rookie contract because he's got all these great things around him, but you got to be careful once you pay him. Can he mask some of your deficiencies? Because ultimately, that's what a franchise quarterback is. He makes people around him better. He hides your weaknesses. And for whatever reason, Carson Wentz has not been able to do that. And the Eagles have sort of failed Wentz in retooling the roster around him.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that contract, it doesn't even technically take effect until next year.
Exactly. I told that twice, like 2 weeks ago. I was appalled when I found out.
It's insane. I mean, the same thing happened with, like, Todd. I mean, it's a different conversation, obviously, but one I'm sure you guys have had about running backs. Todd Gurley, the same thing happened. They cut him before the end of his contract. Like, I think that's just why, like, the idea of paying a guy that you want to be loyal to and you want to be the face of your franchise early, like, it sounds good, but you're risking, like, just hamstringing yourself for, like, so long. The Rams did that with Gurley and Jared Goff. And I think you're kind of seeing that, you know, maybe if they're upset for a year that you didn't pay them and they let everybody know how upset they are, whatever, you pay them eventually. But if you pay them too soon and then they're bad, then that's way worse. Because, I mean, at least in 2 years from now, if Daniel Jones is amazing and you haven't paid him yet and he's upset that you haven't paid him, at least you know that he's amazing. If you pay him now and then he gets worse, then you're screwed. So, I think teams are going to keep paying their quarterback early because if you feel like you have the guy, then you want to make sure he stays there. But I think that, yeah, you really learned a lot there about how to handle a contract.
Yeah, I think that – I don't know if this is going to happen, but I want to see if quarterback contracts, or at least the first one after their rookie contract, gets shorter, where it's not 5 years or 6 years, right? It's more like a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal. and then you pay him that 5-year deal if he shows that he's worthy by like year 2 or 3. Like, I just wonder how this is going to be perceived around the league, because like you said, it hasn't even kicked in yet. Yeah. And they've already benched the guy.
They're gonna be stuck with a $35 million backup next year.
Yes, and that's wild. So let me ask you this: what happens in Philly? Like, is Doug Peterson gone? Is Harry Roseman gone? Is Carson Wentz gone? Like, what happens now? Because it's such a odd situation with how this team, where this team was and where they are now.
It's an interesting question. I want to say that I think that I don't think they're going to clean house, and they probably, if they're going to fire one of them, I think they got to fire both of them. Doug Peterson seems so exasperated with the situation. I don't know. I think he's frustrated. I don't know how much control he has over a lot of this stuff. I think Howie has controlled a lot. I think they've dictated a lot with the quarterback stuff. I think Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, has maybe been a little too involved. But
the decision was Hurts. Who made that decision to draft Jalen Hurts?
The reporting is that to draft him. It was Howie's call is my impression, but I mean it's not like Doug Peterson, if he clearly liked Jalen Hurts as a prospect, Doug was like, I don't think he's a good player, I don't think they would have drafted him. I think Doug probably played a hand in it a little bit, but the idea that coming out of that draft, Howie Roseman was saying stuff like, this has nothing to do with Carson Wentz, we want to be a quarterback. It had everything to do with Carson Wentz.
It's one of those coach speak situations. Like, you don't spend a second round pick on a quarterback.
I mean, that pick looks even so much worse. Even if Jalen Hurts becomes great, it looks even worse because they needed so much other stuff. Yeah. And they, that's what you do as a luxury pick if you're a great team like the Ravens or something. If I gun to my head, I'd say Doug is probably gone, and they keep Howie. I think Howie is really close to Jeffrey Lurie. I don't know what – they could probably get a decent coach in there. I don't know. There's other jobs that are probably more appealing because their salary cap situation is just an absolute mess. And then Carson Wentz, I've seen a lot of stuff about, they should trade him. I don't see a team willingly giving up anything of value for Carson Wentz right now.
Well, that's the thing. So I think Jeff Caparoso of Turn on the Jets, I think his podcast is – had an interesting idea. It's very NBA, along the lines of the Brock Osweiler situation, where you basically pay a team to take Carson Wentz off your hands by feeding them draft picks with Carson Wentz in a trade package. My only question is, why would the Eagles do that? Because then not only do you not have a quarterback, but not only that, not only do you not have a quarterback, but if you're sending high picks with the quarterback, then there go your percentage chance of finding a replacement for that bad quarterback decreases significantly. So
yeah, the Eagles need to accumulate picks. They don't need to trade picks.
Yes.
I honestly think they could get a pick, but Carson Wentz, if you can convince yourself that if he had a better supporting cast, he'd be good. I can see a team convincing themselves of that, like the Colts or something like that.
Yeah. With Frank Reich. And
speaking of the Colts, me and Ethan were talking about this too. Frank Reich leaving the Eagles is not talked about enough
It is in Philly. I know that for sure. Just about every week since he left. Everybody's been trying to downplay that at first, but it's become more and more obvious that Doug needs another voice in the room that he trusts, or he's so set on running the whole offense himself. And I think he lost a lot of the creativity that he had once Frank Reich and John DeFilippo, who's with the Bears now. That's probably the biggest. Frank Reich ultimately is probably the biggest loss they've had in the last couple of years. And that just goes to show you how important picking the right guys for your coaching staff is. It's going to be something to watch as the Giants become contenders, if they become contenders, if Jason Garrett's still here or if he's not, who you're bringing in. It's funny with the tough part about hiring good coaches is if they're good enough, then they're probably going to leave for a head coaching job soon after that. But yeah, you can't really decide that, obviously. But yeah, they need to get a creative play caller in here because Jason Garrett is not creative.
Almost need a farming system for coaches because a guy has one good year, he gets a head coaching job. Like Joe Brady might get a head coaching job. Yeah. He was he was the offensive coordinator at LSU. So it's just crazy how fast
he was. I don't think he was even the offensive coordinator at LSU. I think he was the passing game coordinator at LSU.
Sorry, the passing game coordinator at LSU.
If you're viewed as if somebody labels you an offensive mastermind and you're young, you're gonna be
free pass for a job. Yeah.
Yes. So It's interesting to see what's happening in Philly. And it's definitely good for me as a Giant fan, but someone that's watching, it's a
disaster, man. Like, it's really bad over there right now.
It's going to be interesting. But you think Carson Wentz is back next year? Unless will they try to trade Carson Wentz? Like, I don't understand what you think they'll see.
Like, the problem is, like, it needs to be a good enough offer that it's worth, like, taking the hit that they take. Because they're still going to, you know, I think if they cut him, they take, like, a $36 million dead cap or, like, something ridiculous. I forget what the number is. And if they trade him, it's, like, slightly less. So you have to, like, get enough back to where it's worth taking that hit as opposed to just, you know, waiting the year out, letting him either compete for the he'll compete for the job at least, I imagine, unless Jalen Hurts is amazing over the next month. But my gut says that he's back in training camp competing for a job. Maybe they try and trade him for the deadline. More likely he's gone after 2021.
So he has a $59 million cap.
That's right. So if they cut him, that's what it is, yeah.
They would have to trade him before
– or the new first year, yeah.
Yeah. So his dead cap would be $33 million if they trade him.
Yeah, so, like, exactly. So if a team offers you a fourth-round pick, are you probably not. If a team offers you a second-round pick, then, yeah, you do it. But I don't know if there's – it's going to be a second-round pick. It's more like – I mean, Nick Foles got a fourth from the Bears, which was insane at the time and still looks like that in retrospect. And maybe that's Carson Wentz. I mean, Wentz is probably a better quarterback than Foles still right now, like, just if pure talent. But, yeah, I just don't see a team that's going to be willing to give up what you need to give up.
I don't even know where he would fit.
Yeah, I mean, it's everybody's always looking for a quarterback, I guess, but
yeah.
It's such a weird situation. Yeah, Sam Darnold is another interesting one too. Yeah, he actually might get some value in a trade. Honestly, Darnold,
it's possible.
But even if it's a second round pick, are you going to give up on Carson Wentz, or are you going to be like, let me just see what he can do for the 1 year that I am sort of stuck with him? And then we'll make that decision after the year.
Well, I don't think the Eagles are going to be good anyway next year, so you might as well just see if you can at least build back up his trade value in some way.
Yes, it is a bizarre situation.
That is, man.
All right. Should we do questions and wrap up before the Ravens game starts? I'll take that as a resounding yes. Do you think wide receiver one is the position we need the most? If not, what would it be? Zach, you can go first.
It's a good question. I lean towards no, but, like, just because I think it's easier to find a number one wide receiver than it is to find a top pass rusher. And I think they really need a top pass rusher. And the item's been good, but they need another second cornerback. So it kind of depends. I don't know. It's tough because it kind of depends on where they're drafting. If they're 19, I say maybe you use the money on a pass rush use the money on, like, a pass rusher in a corner and then draft a wide receiver. If they're number six, then maybe the opposite. But I think you can make the case for a wide receiver being the most important, but I don't know if I believe that it is.
Weiss?
Yeah, I think with wide receiver, you have to look at where you're drafting, look at what's going to be available in free agency. Should the Giants dish out $20 million to Kenny Golladay? I don't know. Allen Robinson? I don't know. Would it be best to, like, see if you can get Corey Davis on a similar type deal that you got James Bradbury? I think that would be something that I would be intrigued with. Maybe you can get a Chris Godwin for cheap. But dishing out $20, $21 million for Allen Robinson or Kenny Golladay, guys that I like, I think are good wide receivers, definitely wide receiver ones, but haven't been healthy. And you just...
How often does that work out, too? Like, when you sign a receiver contract in free agents like that, I would say,
I think for the Giants, it's the name of the game at the wide receiver position is not necessarily buy low. I think invest some money, but try to see if you can get multiple guys in here.
Take a few swings.
And see if one guy can emerge as sort of that wide receiver one.
Yep, I agree.
Do you think we keep or fire Gettleman after this season?
I think I read Zach's piece today and trying to give credit to Dave Gettleman. I will hold off on the Dave praise until after the season. There's nothing more that I would love to do than to be wrong about Dave Gettleman. I still have my doubts, but that piece that you wrote, and I keep talking about all the stuff you write, awesome stuff about how everyone is scared of Joe Judge, right? He scares the shit out of people. It seems like he is the head honcho of this operation. And If they can continue drafting like this, then I don't really care who the GM is.
I think to jump off that, like, I don't think anybody but those two know, like, really, I mean, the people in the building really know, like, who, what the power dynamic is, but ultimately all that matters is if their relationship is working and they're able to, like, have off seasons like they did this year, then can find, bring Gettleman back. I personally probably still wouldn't bring him back. I think a lot of his philosophies are just, like, behind the times. I mean, you guys, I'm sure, have talked about this plenty. I mean, a lot, if you look at it, a lot of the things he had to do this offseason were because of the mistakes he's made in the past. Like, if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't give Nate Solder that big contract and then he fails miserably, then they don't even need to draft Andrew Thomas fourth and they can get, you know, a playmaker in there. I mean, even Nate Solder opting out for this season is the only reason why they were even able to sign Logan Ryan. Like, they wouldn't have been able to afford him if not for that. And now you have to pay Nate Solder next year too. So that topic's going to come back up again. Like, he made a lot of mistakes those first 2 years, and it's the reason why they were 1-7. They didn't have the talent to win those close games.
Yep.
Like, this coach staff has developed these young guys to, like, compete, but, like, that's why I was very critical of him for the first half of the season. I got a lot of really weird amount of, like, emails getting mad at me for being so mean to Dave Gettleman. I had one really funny one where I've showed this, like, all my friends, and it just cracks me up. The guy, like, emailed me. He's like, I said to my friend, Dave Gettleman must have smacked Zach's mom or something for why he's, like, always so mean about him.
Let me tell you one thing about Giant fans. There is I'm going to say not a large, but a good chunk of Giant fans that have this weird infatuation with defending Dave Gettleman.
Yes.
Where it is, the guy has not won anything here. Like, I understand if this was like a Joe Gibbs situation where you're like, the guy was a, you know, came back the second time, he's already won a, you know, a Super Bowl here. Like, I get it. You want to, you know, you still think he can, you know, rekindle some of that magic, but the guy hasn't won anything. And it's just, like, weird seeing.
It's worse, like, than that. It's, he didn't win anything, came out and admitted, hey, I fucked up. And you still have people saying, no, Dave, you didn't fuck up. It's a bizarro world.
Well, and you know, one of the things with him, and, you know, I've talked to Dave Gettleman one-on-one. I wrote a story about him last year, like, about his background. I don't think he's, like, a bad guy by any means. I think he's actually quite a good man.
No one's saying that. He's just a shitty football manager.
I prefaced that by saying, like, he came out and he was, like, quite cocky with, like, a lot of his comments, you know, and anyone who pushed back at him, you know, they were the ones who were wrong. I mean, the whole keyboard thing is legendary at this point. That gift's been reused. You know, anyone who questioned his Barkley pick, anyone who, you know, questioned this and that and why he did the Odell Beckham thing, we didn't sign him to trade him, then he trades him. Like, I mean, it's all ad nauseum at this point. But, like, I think part of the reason why he got, like, such heavy amount of criticism outside of New York even was just that brazenness with how he, like, approached things. Like, I'm right, you're wrong. And then he comes out, like you said, he comes out and is like, yeah, I wasn't good enough. Well, I mean, y'all were saying that the whole time.
It took a while.
It's not just the fact that he's missed. It's the fact that the cockiness like, I've watched a lot of the times he's spoken to the media, and the way he comes off, it's like, dude, like, it makes you almost dislike the guy even more. And not nothing personal, but just the way you come off from a professional standpoint. Like, you've messed up a lot. Like, we can sit here, we can spend an entire episode talking about all the misses Dave Gettleman has had, from the Alec Ogletree trade to the Nate Solder contract to the Golden Tate signing. I mean, we can go on and on and on, right? Like, it's just, it's crazy. But, and I know fans want to be like, sort of crown him as like, well, look, we're, you know, look, it's like, no, we're not there yet. Yes, I've told Ethan this. The Giants are finally not headed in the wrong direction, but they're not necessarily headed in the right direction yet in terms of talent, right? We still have to wait and see. They still have a lot of work to do, but they just seem like, fans just seem sort of think that now we're on the precipice. We're there. We're gonna be this contender next year. Some even think this year. I don't know, but we're not there yet. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done with this roster, and it's far from
finished product. And you have to decide if Dave Gettleman is the one to do that work.
Exactly.
If he's not, then you have to move on. The problem with John Mara, as you guys know, he's really loyal to his people. That's the reason why Dave Gettleman's here in the first place, because he uses one of his guys. Yep. You know, he always fired people too late, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's the one reason why, even when they were losing, I was like, I could see him justifying it because of how weird this year was, kind of thing. And now that's one.
Think about this, Zach. You weren't here during the GM search. the Giants GM job opened up for the first time since 1970 something. And they interviewed four people.
And three of them were in the building.
Yeah.
Three of them were in the building. One of them got fired immediately when Dave Gettleman hired Mark Ross. And the other guy, the fourth guy, was Louis Riddick.
Louis Riddick, yeah. Wild. I mean, it kind of like, that's kind of the root of everything that's been wrong since then. They didn't expand their minds in any way. They're like, I mean, Dave had some success in Carolina. He did a good job over there. And I mean, but he also, there's probably a reason why he didn't last there either, right? So,
yeah. All right, let's rapid fire through a few of these last ones. This is a good one. What is wrong with Mark Schlereth?
That was a whole weird thing that happened there.
I won't comment.
Mark Schlereth had, might I say, one too many on Sunday. I mean, the commentary, I know I just said rapid fire, but me personally, I very rarely, if ever, take notice of who is calling a game. That's just me. The color commentary, the play-by-play, like, if you have a good voice and you're not a total moron, I will just, like, sit there, and I'm focused on the game. I don't really care, like, who's saying what. Aside from, you know, play-by-play or, you know, an analyst explaining something that's going on. After he said something about Evan Engram's blocking, that really got my attention. And then he had a tirade against Art Stapleton on Twitter that was out of nowhere and totally bizarre. I don't know if you guys saw that.
I'm gonna no comment this one.
Okay.
I saw it. I know what you're talking about, Ethan. But all I'm gonna say is, one of the good things about playing meaningful football in December and playing against good teams is that they send better commentators to commentate the games.
Yeah.
So that's all I'll say about that.
All right. How do you see Jason Garrett adjusting route concepts for Arizona? The run is working, but do we see more of a run-pass balance?
I just think, listen, probably we can get into the X's and O's, but he's got to call better plays. I mean, some of his play calling is atrocious. I just got to see more. I mean, listen, like I said, Daniel Jones, number six pick. I know it's only his second year, but we got to see. I want to see balls down the field. I want to see play action, play to his strengths. Continue to run the ball successfully. I think that's sort of the identity of the Giants' offense for the rest of the year, I think, is going to be, or even going forward. They're a team that's going to run the football and use play action. I think that's what plays their quarterback strengths. So I think you're going to see a lot of that. But I want to see more of Wayne Gallman. I want to see more. I think this is one thing I noticed, and maybe it was because of the backup quarterback, but they got to get Sterling Shepard involved more than what they're giving him right now.
Absolutely.
He's sort of become hidden the last couple weeks, but he's a good receiver, very good slot receiver, and I would like to see them get him involved in the offense more and more.
I guess so. I mean, I don't know if you guys are looking at Twitter, but I guess Dez Bryant got a positive COVID test.
That's what somebody texted me that.
And he basically decided he's not going to play the rest of the season now.
Wow. Yeah, he just retired again on Twitter.
Wow, that's crazy. That comeback didn't last long.
Nope, especially – Sorry. No, it's fine. Especially in a Dez revenge game, too, against the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So we were talking, and I looked at my phone, and someone was calling me and was like – I think it was just telling me that Dez was – they texted me, Dez got COVID, and he retired. And
like, that's like a 2020, like, sentence in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And I'm like – that's right.
Ravens?
Yeah, we're on video, and I'm like, yo, you guys need to check your phone. It's crazy, so –
I saw some funny tweets last week because Ravens lost half their team, obviously. And it was like, what year is this? It's like Robert Griffin III is throwing to Dez Bryant.
On a Wednesday, for a Wednesday afternoon
game. A Wednesday night game or whatever,
It's crazy.
Wild. All right, I think we could wrap up on that now that the game's starting. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me, Ethan GSN, Weiss, NYG Daily, the blog, Gotham SN. Follow Zach on Twitter, at Zach Blatt. That's Zach with a K. And Blatt, two T's. Go read his stuff.
Highly recommend.
Yeah, Weiss.
I have a lot of people that DM me all the time. You know, guys that cover the team, too biased, blah, 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 blah. I need somebody. I'm like, and recently I've been saying, yo, check out this guy, Zach. I mean, he's got good stuff.
I really appreciate
that. Genuine. He's not just saying that because he came on the show. Dude has some awesome stuff written. Got a good piece on Nico Lelos that just dropped a couple days ago, right?
Yesterday.
And if you're a Dave Gellman fan, he wrote an article about giving credit to Dave Gellman.
Yeah, well, I will say, I was just looking at all the moves he made this year and ranking them. That's all I'll say.
Perfect. All right.
So go check him out, and thanks for coming on, Zach.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was fun.